Parshas Truma obviously is going to be discussing many of the details of the Mishkan. And a lot of, obviously, when we set up in the past, we discussed the 613 mitzvahs. Not all the 613, not all the mitzvahs quoted in the Torah make it to the 613. In order to be qualified for the 613, according to almost everybody, there has to be a mitzvah applicable for all time, not only applicable in the desert for the 40 years. So as an easy example, all of the commandments, obligations, prohibitions, and mitzvahs connected to the mon, almost all of them, so all of them are really not relevant. For example, it says in the Torah, you were not allowed to leave the mon overnight. That was a prohibition given to the Jews at the time of the desert. That doesn't get counted in 613 because that applied during those 39 and a half years, whatever it was. Doesn't apply nowadays, so it doesn't work. Most of what you're going to be reading, many of what you're going to be reading in the base of, in the Mishkan stuff, a lot of them are not going to be relevant for all time because it's only relevant for the Mishkan itself. Mishkan itself is during those X amount of years, more than the 40 years, by the way, because remember they took the Mishkan after the desert, and then it was still around for 350 years until we built the base of Mikdash. But it doesn't make a difference. Those are limited time. When it's limited in time, those things don't count. If it would make it to limited time, base of Mikdash, like by Karbonis, that does make it. That's not called limited. That's base of Mikdash, and we're missing a base of Mikdash. It's applicable today. We don't have a base of Mikdash. In the desert, we don't plan on going back there. Now, one of the 613 that made the list, was not only applicable in the Midbar, that means. And it goes like this. We have the setup of the stuff today. We're going through it, and it starts in 25, just to see if they do it outside. I think it's the first one, actually. It says the tabernacle, how they're doing it, and then starts with the Urn, the Ark. And we have, for Charles's happiness, we have a previous shir on RabbiHubla.com called Raid of the Lost Ark, one of the great names of a shir of all time, on why the Rambam doesn't seem to quote the concept of the dimensions of the Ark, which are mentioned in this week's parasha, why he doesn't mention it for the Beis HaMikdash. He mentions the dimensions of Menorah and the Shulchan and the Mizbeach, and he doesn't mention the Ark. Go see RabbiHubla.com, Raid of the Lost Ark. We're going to pick a different one here. And here it is. Toward the end of the thing, it says, when you're talking about building the ark, and it says in 25:15, English. And I'm starting on 13, but it's the same idea. You shall make, I'm going to write poles. They were S-T-A-V-E-S. Staves. Staves or staves, Charles? I don't even know. Staves. You shall make poles of wood and cover them with gold. And insert the poles in the rings on the sides of the ark with which to carry the ark. That makes a lot of sense. Just, by the way, this phrase that I just told you is going to be by the Mizbeach, and it's going to be by the Shulchan. Same idea. You put in order to travel, you put in poles in order to carry it. The poles shall remain in the rings of the ark. They may not be removed from it. Hebrew. Loi, the main words is, a prohibition. Do not remove the poles from the ark at any time. This is not written by the other vessels of the Mishkan. That means even though we put in poles by the Mishkan, by the Mizbeach, even though we put in poles by the Shulchan, even though we put in poles in other categories, the reality was that only the ark has this prohibition that at no point in time can you remove these poles. Doesn't matter if you're traveling or not traveling, the poles must at all times remain within their rings. That's what it says. And the obvious question is going to be two questions. Okay, that makes the 613. The reason why this prohibition makes the 613 is because it means even after the Mishkan, when we have the Urn in the base of Mikdash, and we have these two poles, the poles go into the Kutcher Kutchum, and even when they're traveling, even when they're not traveling, when they're traveling, they're holding it, even when they're not traveling, these poles remain attached to the ark at all times. And the question the commentators are going to ask, we're going to do tonight, depends on how long it takes, we're going to do seven different approaches. Stephen, welcome on. I'm assuming we'll come up with a couple ideas on his own right now. So the question we're asking is very simple. One of the 613 commandments is, do not remove the poles that were used to carry the ark from their rings, because they're placed in the rings, and this is not true about the poles in the altars, plural, two mizbeachs, or the shulchan. What would make the poles of the ark seemingly different, and maybe more important, that would be a better word, that they must remain at all times within the rings, even when you encamp. That means everywhere else, what happened was a very simple situation. You get the sound of the shofar, the chatzos, right? It's time to move. The levim would come on in. They would start taking the Mishkan apart. And then when it came to the Mizbeach and or the Shulchan, they would take the poles and insert them in. They would have a travel kit. And then they'd be able to lift it up and start traveling. And when they get the thing to stop, they would put the thing down, take the poles out. When you would be walking into the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan, 99% of the time, when it was there, you would not see the poles. They'll be irrelevant. They have a function. Their function is to help carry. When the function is not relevant because you're in the Beis HaMikdash, you're encamped, then you don't have them. As opposed, there's our question, to the Aron, where it says they never removed. That means when they would come into the Holy of Holies and they would place it down, they would not then go and remove the poles at all. That is the question. Now, this question, by the way, is not my question. Obviously, I just said the seven different answers. But these are early commentators. We're talking about Rishonim already asked this question. So Rishonim already starts saying, wait a second, it's going to go Rishonim, Achronim, and we're going to go through different approaches. What is the reason why the poles can't be removed? So there is a Sefer. Okay. First approach. The Chinuch. As we discussed before, Charles will know, there's a Sefer anonymously written called the Sefer HaChinuch. That means the Sefer, the book of Chinuch of education. That's the 613 mitzvahs. We spoke about it last week as well. He follows the number of the Rambam, the 613 of the Rambam, but not the order. He goes by the order of the Parsha. And what we said why it's a famous Sefer, one of the reasons it's very famous is because not only did he write the specific basic laws and where to find it in the Torah, he would say the Gemara, so here, talk about it, look over there. And then he would give like a moral reason for each one of the 613 commandments. That became one of the reasons why it's famous. Why it's famous in the Tuesday night class, whether in Zoom or in person, is because someone wrote a commentator on it called the Milchus Chinuch. That was also initially anonymously printed and used it as a stepping stone for all of his ideas. And that's why we like to quote the Milchus Chinuch, but of course we like to quote the Sefer HaChinuch, the OG, as well. So he asked this question as well. He asked, wait,
I have a suggestion.
Let's go. Let's hear it.
Maybe the fact that the poles are attached, have come in contact with the Mishkan, have come in contact with it, makes it too holy to remove it.
Not Mishkan, you'd say Ara, the Ark itself. Because the poles in contact with the Mizbeach and the Shulchan are movable. Removable.
Yes, but this is contact with the Ark, which contains the Ten Commandments. This is the holiest place of all, and that when the poles come in contact with that, they're too holy to be dealt with separately.
Excellent. So I'm going to say excellent with an asterisk, because in the end, it's many of the answers I'm going to give, I think, are fundamentally based on what you just said. No one says what you said as is, which I like a lot, because I think when I was preparing for this, that has to be a fundamental underneath it. So we're probably a lot of the answers I'm going to give right now, you're going to say, wait a second, yeah, that's based on what I just said. Possibly. If that's a positive or negative. The positive, if it's based on what you said, that's great, because that means you said something. The question is, why didn't they just stop halfway through? Let's say I give you answer X, and you say, well, answer X, the first half is what I said. I'm like, great, that's a good point. Then why didn't they stop at X? I don't have a good answer for that, because I like what you're saying. And when someone doesn't say it, we have to know. So it could be when we get to stay in contact, the Meshech Chachma, or Sameach, who Charles always loves, his answer could be what you're saying and just making it like practical. It could be he's stopping at what you're saying and then adding to it. So we'll go through this. The Sefer HaChinuch is the first one up. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch gives two answers, again, on the question why the poles of the altar, poles of the ark were not removed as opposed to the other ones. He gives two separate answers. And I think that these two answers create two more answers, just in how you read it. I know I'm wrong in how I'm reading it to his words, but I think once you read those words, just wait a second, that would mean this. So his first answer is this. His first answer, I'll give my spin off on it after. His first answer is that when they get the call, they hear the sound. They have a system, very serious system going in place. They got to undo this whole object, this massive edifice with all its vessels. They got to put it into travel bags and cover it with certain special skins to get ready to travel. They got to rip it apart and know where everything is, because it's got to be put back exactly. In fact, the walls on the left side can't be put in the walls on the right side, even if they were interchangeable. Everything was marked off. So it's a very serious, complex job that, of course, they had a rhythm. They knew they were doing. So he says, impossible that in the course of the trying to do their job diligently, they wouldn't necessarily, I'm using the American term, screw in the poles correctly, fasten it perfectly. And therefore, he writes, that when it comes to the Aron, step up from the other vessels, a little difficult to know why that would happen, more so, since they wouldn't put the poles in correctly, it might potentially, as they're carrying it, loosen and, God forbid, fall. Since that might happen, we said, never take a chance. Get it in. Again, my phrase, put the gums in, nail it in, unmovable. So when you're going in and out, you're never going to have this fear of potentially falling down. Now, he does, that's, again, it's a good answer. 1300s. Possibly he's building on yours. Why? He doesn't say this. Why the ark? You're not afraid anything else is going to fall? So you were saying, most Stephen, that the poles themselves gather a certain holiness. This first answer does not seem to say that the poles have the holiness. He's saying that the poles, the reality of the poles is, since they're holding up the ark, you don't want to take a chance of it falling. And as we know from many times, funerals, God forbid, when people are holding that heavy casket, and the ark weighed a fortune, by the way, if you would count up how much the ark weighed, it's three boxes, right? The wood and the gold. Gold itself is not a lightweight thing. You put on that thing on top with the two kruvim, it's heavy. It had a lot of weight to it. So they're afraid it's going to, not that the Shulchan didn't, not that Mizbeach didn't, but this was very heavy, afraid it's going to fall down. Therefore, check it in, make sure you never have to use it. That's his first answer. His first answer. So he's not saying that the poles have intrinsic value, like you were saying, Stephen, but because of what they're holding, we don't want to take a chance of what they could drop. I'm saying, just as an addition to it, because when I read it the first time, this is what I thought he said, and then I realized I was wrong, is that the reality is, we know, Stephen went to Florida recently. I don't know exactly what you took with you from New York, but when you go from place A to place B, no matter how much you're paying in the movers, things, what we call in American phraseology, dinks and donks. You know, they chip this, they nick this, they nick that. Things are just going to happen. It doesn't, not always is the perfect thing placed down in the new location that looked like it did in the old location. And since the, in between the locations, something might potentially happen, the less you're dealing with something, the better. That means if you could just put something into a box as is and seal it up with the bubbles and send it off, you have a better chance than when you're going to unscrew the dining room set and then re-screw it back in and somewhere else. Odds are more nicks and knacks are going to happen.
The problem is this applies to all poles.
Oh, so therefore he would say, I was saying on his answer, he was saying afraid of dropping it. That would mean almost what you were saying, but not on the poles itself. That since we're more concerned with the Aron, we're more concerned with the Ark, we want to value the potential nicks and knacks much better, which is really, we're not so afraid. These are professionals. These Levium were in the desert. They were good people. We trust them. Really, we trust them 1,000%. But you know what? We're going to take that extra step when it comes to the ark, because we don't even want the potential dink and donk of an ark. And then we're going to be more afraid that we're going to do it as well. So again, not that the poles have any special value to them. It's what they're holding. And therefore, either we're afraid we're going to drop it, or I'm saying a little more, the moving of stuff around creates dinks and donks. We don't want to take a chance. And that would be more of a not taking a chance with that.
Now, why would that still apply in the Beis HaMikdash, though?
Well, that's an excellent question. I did not think of it. Okay. I'm writing that down, actually. That's good. I got to be honest, Michael, that's very good. You're saying that if the whole fear was the movement of it, by the Beis HaMikdash, it does not apply. We have to now, Michael, that's so good. We got to think about that now with every single answer we're going to come up with right now. So his answer was, you're afraid you're going to drop it.
Even during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they did bring an Aron to the
Chumash. Oh. You're right.
I wonder if that wasn't necessarily tomorrow.
Yes, that's a question which Arnold was. So as he's saying, Michael's on fire tonight. What he's saying correctly could be like this. He's saying is that the fact is that
the question, can you repeat the question before you give the answer? Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to get it's both Michael's. Michael's question was that if the whole reason I gave two potential answers, one's openly to say for Achinuch saying we're afraid you're going to drop it, two, Moshe Hubner's response to it, we're afraid we're going to dink a donk it. His and so Stephen's question was why the Aron more than anything else. We're saying the Aron is more valuable. Michael's point is, wait a second, this all concept is only while they're traveling. But when they got into the Beis HaMikdash, the stable house, they went from Mishkan to Mikdash, they didn't move again. It went in there at all. So therefore his question was, wait a second, there's no need to keep the poles in there, which is one of the 613 commands we started with before Akiva was on, that one of the 613 commands is do not remove the poles because it's applicable all the time. Even in the Beis HaMikdash, we kept the poles inside in the Kodesh Kedoshim, the Holy of Holies, the poles stayed in. So Michael's question is, wait a second, they didn't necessarily move the Aron, the Ark, when they got to the Beis HaMikdash. So even if the reason was we're afraid of a dink and donk or a drop, those only apply as they're potentially still traveling with this thing. But once we settle in its final rest place, and we're talking about, maybe not. So Michael himself gave an answer. Wait a second. It's a possibility, and this is a great debate, that the Aron went out during wartime. During certain times, that's how it got captured in the story of Eli and Shmuel HaKohen, right? They took the Aron out for the fight the Palestinians. That's a brand new thing that never happened before, Jews fighting Palestinians. And they went out there, and all of a sudden, they took the Ark with them, and the Palestinians were able to seize it, and I'm not kidding, what do you call it, seize it? They were able to seize the Ark and take it with them, which means the Ark was traveling not only in times of Mishkan, but even because of potentially times of war. So Michael's saying, maybe during times of war, during the Beis HaMikdash, potentially they would take this Aron out, the question which Aron they took, and therefore they would always have to keep it in. So he asked his own question and answered it. By the way, Michael, this is a great line. A Rebbe of mine from, he's still a Rebbe of mine, but told me this 30 years ago, a little less. No, actually a little more. 30 years ago in Israel, I was learning with a great superstar one-on-one most of the day. And at one point, we were discussing something. And within the question, we did something like Michael did. Asked a very good question and thought of a very good answer. So he told me that he got from his Rebbe, Panovich Rav, it was Rav Shmuel Lozovsky, which we're going back now, another 50 years earlier than that. He said he used to have an idea like this. Stephen, tell me if you remember me saying this to you about 20 years ago. His line was this: if you come up with a question, you have an idea, and you built on it, and you have an idea you want to put in a safer, and then you have a question on your own idea, and then someone else comes and answers it, or someone else comes and asks, then your whole idea, ask is worse. If someone else asks on your idea, you have not, don't put it in your safer. If you have a great idea, but there's a good question out that someone else asked, don't put it in. But if you yourself end your whole idea with your own question, it's just more pages in your own safer. It gets extended since you thought of the question as well. So Michael came up with the question and the answer. So it's not exactly a perfect symmetry of what I was saying, but that idea, when you're on your own thing, it just gets added pages. So we have so Michael's answering that it could be when they went out to war. And I'm saying that even so, we know that it could be when they knew the basement would be destroyed, they would have to take it and hide it somewhere. I'm making this up on the spot. Maybe they needed the poles in there because it still had, sadly to say, one more traveling. And hopefully we will get it back very soon. And then it'll stay forever where it is. And then we'll ask Mashiach at the time why we're keeping the poles in there. If when we get to the third basement, but it did go out potentially in war. And also it did go out potentially when they were afraid of it, of the first basement being destroyed. They went and hid the ark, hence the name Raid of the Lost Ark. That's answer one. Answer two, again, what the Chinuch says, and then what I'm going to say. And they're very, very similar. I think this is going to be the beginning of Stephen's answer earlier. He says that in order to have something as people thinking it's perfect, it's very interesting. People thinking it's perfect, at no point in time could you be modifying it all. I'm adding on, but he's saying this, even to travel. That means when you're looking at the Aron, you have to know the Aron's perfection. And therefore, included in that perfection is you're never touching it. Even though it's an outside pole, only for lifting it, only for carrying it, no such thing. You got to picture it as perfect. And that means it never gets touched again. You're not nicking and knacking it. And I'm going to color something in at a certain, that spot I'll color it in. The concept of you going over and touching it to add or minus anything takes away what we call class of perfection. So even though, again, he's not saying this, but this is what he's saying. Even though we would say, hey, wait a second, putting the poles on, that's not the iron. It's not a problem with the iron, but no, it is a problem with the iron. Even if you have to use something to carry it, that becomes a problem. It means it wasn't perfect, in perfect condition for all use at all times, because when it's traveled, it needed to be hooked up to something. Again, that's what he says. In a similar way, which I thought he was saying originally before I got it wrong, and I think the Rabbag actually says it, it's like this. When is Stephen? Tell me. I think you're gonna go for this. When the Aron was not seen ever by the regular Jewish people, it was hidden behind the Holy of Holies, and it wasn't really opened up for the public. The regular place, the Shulchan was open, the Menorah was open. When did the Jews? This is my American version of what the Rabbag is saying. When did the Jews get to see the Aron? If possibly in its travel state, possibly it probably covered, but in its travel state, there was a possibility of seeing it. So he said that. You want to have the picture of people thinking of what the Aron looks like. And when they're in their mind, not as idolatry, when they're davening and thinking of all the great artifacts in Jewish history, and they're thinking of all the great things the Jews have produced, and thinking of all the great things the Jews have as holy thing. You want the Jews to picture in their mind, again, my American version of what he's saying here, to picture in their mind exactly what it actually is going to look like. So since when it's traveling, they see it with the poles. So Hashem said, you know what? When they're going to be davening and thinking about it, I want the poles to be there as well. Because I want their picture in their mind, what they're thinking about 24-7, about this incredible piece of artistry and a piece of holiness, as Stephen said, the ultimate holiness we have. I want them to picture it perfectly as is. So again, here it's a little more of a question what he's saying. Does that mean that now the poles have a certain level of holiness? Because if you remove it, that doesn't have the holiness? Or he's just saying the picture of it? It's a little vague on where he holds the status of the poles are. But it seems to be in the picture of people's minds. Since they're always thinking about the Aron, and they only know the Aron with the picture of the poles, then we got to keep the poles in there. Now, I don't know if you look at the...
Rabbi, I have a question for you.
Yes.
The poles were in the hooks, or the circles, right?
Yes, the rings.
Rings. Were the poles capable of moving within the rings? Obviously, they had to be put in at one point, Were they held in a particular spot, or could you move? You were capable of removing it, let's say, but you were forbidden to.
Excellent, excellent. So now, I will tell you, Stephen, that this question you're asking, the statement question you're asking, I'm going to ask it a different way. Same question, asked, modified it. The reason why I'm asking it my way is because I'm quoting, when I asked this question, the holy great grandfather, the Michas Chinuch. That's why I'm very happy on the same path. So the Michas Chinuch has this question. It's literally the same thing you're asking. He's there and you're here. Same thing. He asked this. When it says, which we started the whole night with, the phrase is, you shall not remove, lo yasu, you shall not remove the poles from their rings. So he asked the question, to violate the prohibition, how much does it call to move? Do you have to remove it entirely from the rings? Or even if you're within the ring and you're moving it a little bit, did you violate the law? Which I think is your question, just again, one step to the side. It's the exact same idea being brought up. Can it be moved? Does it? So he asked that question. In order to remove it, what is called removable? What is called removing? Is it removing or moving? I'm doing that in English. If you move it over from, if it's like this and you go like this, did you violate it or no? The only violation comes when you pull the entire thing out. And it's a Michas Chinuch. It's another one of his classics. He also has, by the way, the same way, which just since we're bringing Michas Chinuch tonight, we'll put it into the website under the Michas Chinuch category. Similarly, he asked, if there are two poles, you have to carry it. So you need four people carrying it on two poles. Let's say you remove one of the poles. You only move one of the poles and the other one stays where it is. That's another question he asked. Does it have to be both plural? It's a very interesting word because we're using the word in English, it comes out the same. In the Hebrew, in the Pesukim, it says, lo yasuru mimenu. Lo yasuru seems plural. In Oscar, they say they may not be removed. So they would be what? They can go both ways, right? They can mean both can't be removed or either one shouldn't be removed. I'm in English as well as the, I think that they can go either way. But the Michas Chinuch asked both of these questions. He says, is it both cannot be removed or one cannot be removed? And then Stephen's point is, when you say moved, is it moved or removed? Excellent. And that's Michas Chinuch. We're not going into all those details tonight. Maybe next week we'll figure it out. Next answer. Next answer, what I thought Stephen was saying originally. Why is it, again, that the poles of the Aron are the only ones that stay inside the whole time, entire time, and are staying there? And he says, not because of the next and the next, not because of the potential. He says, you want the people spending as little time, not because of next and next, as little time as possible with the Aron. You're going into the Holy of Holies. You gotta take the walls off. You gotta take everything off. We don't want people sitting and dealing with the Holy Ark. And therefore, we're gonna keep the poles in there. It's less time. It means you don't have to deal with anything going on at the time within the Ark itself. That means get in there and put the covering on or whatever you gotta do and get out. Because this is the holiest place and you're not supposed to. The word benefits, it's the word me'ilah. It's one of the many of the 613 commandments. Is, you know, you cannot benefit, that's really the word, from holy stuff. So what does it mean you cannot benefit? By being in there, enjoying it, being around it, on some level, we don't like that idea. It's not good. Not because of the physical dinks and dunks. No, because of the holiness of what it is. This represents a certain kedusha, a certain holiness, and therefore we don't want people just standing around with it, taking selfies. We're not interested. Get in there, get out, and do your thing. That's what he says. And that's already five answers we gave. Now goes the Meshech Chachma, which I think is Meshech Chachma, the great Meshech Chachma, as we said many times in this class. Maybe one day we'll make a category, Charles, of it on the website. Meshech Chachma gives two separate answers. We're going to do a second one first, just because then we'll talk about the first one. But the second one is fascinating. He says, the Gemara says that we have an obligation to light the menorah in the Mishkan and Beis HaMikdash. 613 commandments, an avodah, part of the service, the daily service in the Mishkan of the Beis HaMikdash was to have the menorah lit. Now the Rambam, unlike other Rishonim, they have to look at the Gemaras, says that the obligation to have the menorah lit is in the morning as well. It's lit in the morning and it's lit at night. And the Gemara says, I'm saying Gemara Rambam out of order, but that's the way it goes. The Gemara says, listen, you cannot think for one second that the reason, I mean, this comes up with Hanukkah, that the reason why the menorah was lit was because God needed light at night. That's just idiotic. You can't say it. It's stupid to say. That's Lashon Gemara Yuma. Do you think God needs the light? No, it's a commandment to do it. And maybe even to prove that, the Meshech Chachma wants to say, that the Rambam's going to say light it during the day. If you're going to light it only at night, someone can make a mistake and say, the reason you light it, maybe some guy doesn't know anything. He thinks God needs light. But since the Rambam is saying light it during the day as well, no one can think a guy needs to light during the day. During the day, you don't turn your lights on during your house during the day. Oh, during the day, you don't need it. So why are you lighting it? It's a mitzvah. Why are you lighting at night? Because it's a mitzvah.
Yeah, but there were no windows in the Michigan, man.
There were no windows.
Right, it was covered up. It was dark inside even during the
day. Right. And the point is, even though that wasn't what it said. Now, the Gemara is really talking about the Beis Midrash, but it applies to Mishkan as well. Correct. Even though we would might be thinking that the menorah is there for light, you want to say that, well, Michael, you're saying, therefore, it would be possible that a person will make a mistake during the day also.
Right. I assume it was dark. I mean,
two for two, Michael. I got to write this down. Check it out also. Michael, two for two tonight. I got to write this down. Good one. You're right. You're saying in the Mishkan, since it was dark, people make the same mistake. I like it. Got to look it up. Michael, got to look it up.
Didn't the coverings provide some light also?
I'm talking about the Mishkan. Right, I know. I'm just saying to everyone else. The Beis Hamikdash was open, and the Mishkan was an open area, and then there was a closed area. Closed meaning
closed area, possibly the something on the covering that provided light also.
Maybe. But I like the point. So that was about light. So since when it comes to the light, excellent, by the way, since it comes to the light, we know from the Gemara that God doesn't need the light. And therefore, we're going to give extra time and we're going to do it during the daytime to prove, by the way, it doesn't need the light. The Meshech Chach wants to say amazing. We have a phrase that we've quoted in this class relevant to Kairach, that when someone carries the Aron is backward. You don't carry the Aron carries itself and you're just standing there. That's a phrase that comes up many times. Noise es noise. It carries the people carrying it. The urn was not classically carried. First, as I said before, the urn weighed, I don't know the numbers. It could be 3 tons. I don't know if 4 people can carry 3 tons. It was an insanely heavy object, by the way. And even in these heavy,
remember, you could have more than 4 people with 2 poles. You could have 2 people at each position.
Correct.
8 people easily, or even more.
Correct, but the Gemara goes into the Gemara says when it talks about where the poles were situated, discusses how 2 people on the inside. The poles can be more people, but that would depend on the space you have and the length of the poles. So, for example, yes. If the poles on right, so okay, so since now you have, so the Gemara discusses where the poles were, if they were east, west, or north, south, and within the Gemara discussing where the poles were and the length of the poles, it comes out clear that not that many people would have been able to carry it. So, therefore, the Meshech Chach wants to say. That how do you know? Maybe you're getting 4 strong guys, maybe. So he says like this: what we're gonna do is when it comes to the Aron, because only the Aron has this concept in the Gemara that says that that the person carrying it is not carrying it; the Aron is carrying the person. Therefore, what he wants to say the Meshech Chachma is this: that we have the poles remain even when it's stationary, even when it's not moving, just like we're lighting the menorah during the daytime. So why we light the menorah during the daytime, but it's absolutely not necessary for light to prove that at nighttime it's not for light. So he says, I have the same idea. You keep the poles in place when it's not being moved to show you that even when it is being moved, the poles don't do anything. The same way the light is irrelevant, and therefore you do it when you therefore light it when it's irrelevant, when you don't need it. The poles are irrelevant and unneeded, and therefore you leave the poles in even when it's obvious you don't need it in ground. That's a mesh. It's a brilliant thing about Meshech Chachma. The reason the other things don't have this advantage. The other kalim, according to what you read, the simple version of Gemara, the people holding it were actually physically lifting it. The Aron was the only one that says not. The Aron, that's one, by the way, and Kairach was one of the Aron carriers, by the way. I think we want to discuss by Kairach. So since the person carrying it is not carrying it, we want to show you. You know how we know she's not carrying it? Because it's irrelevant. Now, this could be, Stephen, also what you're saying, that the poles have a certain inherent teaching to us. They're teaching us something. The poles are teaching us that don't forget to remember that Hashem is always running, Hashem is always carrying us. I'm adding this on what Meshech Chach was saying, but it's the same idea. Know that, and by the way, it says, if you remember, that when you look out in the Mishkan, that the poles were visible from behind the curtain. That means when you would look into the Mishkan, you would see the outline of the poles touching against the Mishkan. Why is that necessary? Hub is saying based on the Meshech Chach, I'll tell you what they're saying. Because every time they see it, to remind themselves, what are the poles? Why are the poles inside over there? I don't see a pole by the shulchan. I don't see a pole by the mizbeach. Why do I see the poles over there? Oh, because the poles are irrelevant, like the Meshech Chachma says. It's only to teach us that the Aron carries itself. What do you mean the Aron carries itself? It means the Aron's carrying everybody around here. So every time we're going to look, we're going to see the outline of the poles. What we're supposed to be thinking is to remind ourselves that, by the way, Hashem's carrying us all. Hashem's running the world at all times, and that's what we always have to remember. That would be my addition to what Meshach Chachma was saying. Meshach Chachma is another answer, it's the same idea. Not the same idea, but another answer we could build on. Meshach Chachma says this. There are three crowns in Judaism. Crown of what's called the Malchus, running the world. That's from the Shulchan. There's a crown of Kahuna. That's from the Menorah. And there's a crown of Torah. The Torahs represent, as Michael said before, the Aron, the Ten Commandments are in the Aron. The Aron represents the concept of Torah. So he wants to say this. Torah requires, it's similar with the Aron, requires the people holding it. Not what I was saying before, that they don't get to hold it, but people hold it, people are carriers. And he wants to say, almost what Stephen started with, that the carriers of the Aron have to know their value as well. They're needed and required and available 24/7. Even when it looks like everything's going well, no, make sure those guys are there, making sure that they are providing, the carriers are the ones who are providing the monetary wealth for the people to sit and learn. We have the what we call the classic Yisachar rule. One sits and learns and one supports the other guy. Now, according to Stephen, that makes a lot of sense. Because that means that because they're touching the greatness, I'm adding on to what the Meshach Chachma was saying based on what Stephen said earlier, because they're adding on to the Torah and they're supporting the Torah, they're used to carry the weight of the Torah, on some level, as Stephen said, since they're touching the greatness of the Torah, don't forget, they're great too. They're great too. There's a famous debate, famous thing we've said before in this class, that if someone supports Torah at 120 when he gets upstairs, it's possible that he gets upstairs and a chip's implanted in his head for all the Torah he helps support, and he now has that Torah knowledge. Because he's not just supporting the Torah. It becomes one within him as well. It becomes part of him. And if as Stephen was almost saying, it creates a certain holiness in the poles themselves. The poles themselves now have a holiness because they are supporting the Torah itself. He was saying supporting the Ark. Stephen was going earlier with the Ark itself. He was saying the Ark representing the Torah concept. And that's a necessary thing for Klai Yisrael to know, that the supporters of Torah have to realize that they're always available to help support, to get this honor, and they're always needed. He's ready. Meshach Chachma was not saying it the way other people say he's saying it. Other people say he's saying it, meaning it's like a Musa Shmuz to the rich guys who remember to always help. It's not the way he says it, by the way. He says it the opposite. The Torah people have to realize that they always need these poles available. It's just the focus on who it goes on. To have a famous question that
are you saying something in the effect of like Tashmisha Kedusha? Where you Tashmisha Kedusha have
Tashmisha Kedusha means that what? Tashmisha Kedusha means that the something that's
used for a mitzvah or something.
Something that's a cover
for a Sefer Torah or something like that. Right?
Right. The cover of the Sefer Torah becomes holy in itself because it's covered in the Sefer Torah. That's what Stephen was saying earlier, right, that the poles themselves touch greatness. I'm saying that I'm agreeing.
Okay, but then for the Shulchan, for instance, the poles would not be Tashmisha Kedusha. It only applies to the arm.
I would say no. Offhand, I like the question again. He's asking because Charles likes when I repeat questions. Yeah. He's asking if the pole of the other vessels are less holy. I would say yes, only because I think they were created on condition to be removed. So because of that condition to be moved and removed, it has less holiness than the ark one that stays within the ark all times. Yeah, I would say yes. Less. That's offhand what I'm saying. But, I think
Rabbi,
yes.
Was there any requirement that the men who graft the pole and poles and carry the iron, that the hands would have gloves or something on it so that they're not actually touching it?
No, never heard that. I like it.
Just asking.
No. I don't think I've ever heard that. Got to look into that. I don't think so.
It's funny. One other question.
Yes.
Is there any mention that the men who carried it would have to be all of about the same size, so that
the Gemara, I don't know about the exact same, but yes, they gotta fit into a certain space.
Otherwise, it's on an angle.
Yes, height wise, if they're on the shoulders.
If you had two tall guys in the back and two short guys in the front,
right?
It would be not good.
Right. Not good, except if we go to what the Gemara says, that the urn was never really carried. It's only like an appearance of being carried. But yes, on the simple version,
yes, but
I would say don't take a chance.
In that case, it would be an obvious miracle because the two short guys in the front would have their feet off the ground.
Right. I gotta write that down also. I'm gonna write that down. I wanna look that up also about the sizes. I like it. Oh, so they once came to Rav Steinman. And they told Rav Steinman, one of these, they always collect for different yeshivas. So he said, they came to Rav Steinman, they always asked him, like, why are you collecting? Why are there so many kailas? Who needs that many people learning? And his response was, why do you need so many rich guys? So his point was, Rav Steinman's point really was, I think what his point was, is that reverse what we're saying. The rich guys are there to help out the Torah guys. We know that many of the Gedolim, when they married wealthy people and they offered jobs as roughs, the father would say, no. You stay and let me support you because I believe I'm making money because I'm supporting you. My money's going to the right place. As opposed to potentially you getting a job from somebody else. And I don't need you. And if I lose my money. Everyone, great class. I think. Anyway, then, Charles, thanks a million. Till next week.
Thank you, Rabbi. Bye-bye.
We gave seven reasons at least on why the Aaron would be different. Thank you.